Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today's date is June 19th, 2003. Today's session is Gabriel Garcia Marquez, Session 4 of Short Stories, Healing Body and Soul, presented by David Wee, WED 2003-04. Let's listen in.
Thank you for coming to this session. My name is David Wee. I teach English literature and writing at St. Olaf College in Northfield, Minnesota. This is the fourth of five sessions this week on the topic of short stories, healing body and soul, under the summer-wide theme of healing the world. So I picked stories in which there are elements of illness and healing and need for either physical or spiritual renewal. This is the story that perhaps fits that least well, or at least in the oddest way. The story for today is Gabriel Garcia Marquez's story, A Very Old Man with Enormous Wings. And just to check, how many of you have ever read the story? Okay, about half of us have read it, half not. Marquez was born in Colombia, South America, and won the Nobel Prize for Literature 20 years ago. He's a well-known writer, but he's not North American or European. This has been translated into English, and we've had several copies on reserve, which perhaps some of you have used to read the story. Now, what I'd like to do today is a little different from what we've done other times. This is a highly unusual story, and it's one that doesn't require that we understand the whole story from beginning to end before we start talking about it, or don't need to hear the whole story from beginning to end. But I'll tell you briefly what it's about, and then I'm going to read the first couple paragraphs, and then invite others of you to read a paragraph. You know, it's a very short story with only a dozen substantial paragraphs in it. So I'll read the first two, and then if 10 people will sort of follow along with the text, I'll give you a minute to find it here. Everybody.
I can pass the books out.
Yeah,
pass
these out. A couple of you can sit side by side and watch. And then take up a paragraph. And after we read a paragraph, we'll all listen to it as it's being read and then talk about what's happening here. This is a story, very simply, in which one day a couple discovers an eagle or a creature has landed in their backyard, in their courtyard. And this is a very old, decrepit man, but he's got enormous wings. And they don't know what to do. They ask the neighbor. She says, well, obviously it's an angel. And then the rest of the story is simply about the responses of the neighborhood and the culture, the church, the medical profession to this circumstance. And I think it would be fun for us to hear one paragraph at a time, listening carefully for what we think Marquez is doing in this paragraph and how many places we see ourselves in this story. Because I'm convinced this is a story which is designed to embarrass us enormously about how we behave to the visitor, to the stranger, even when it's an angel. So I'll read the first two paragraphs and then the third one, two-line paragraph, And those of you who have a text, have you found where it is in the book? And we'll have you take turns reading a paragraph as we listen and then talk about what's going on here and what do we think the author wants us to understand by his words. Now very quickly you're going to, well, as you can tell by what I've already told you of the plot, this is not pure realism. All the stories that we've read and discussed so far this week have been entirely realistic. Some bizarre things happened here. On the third day of rain, they had killed so many crabs inside the house that Pelayo had to cross his drenched courtyard and throw them into the sea because the newborn child had a temperature all night and they thought it was due to the stench of the crabs. The world had been sad since Tuesday. Sea and sky were a single ash-gray thing, and the sands of the beach, which on March nights glimmered like powdered light, had become a stew of mud and rotten shellfish. The light was so weak at noon that when Pelayo was coming back to the house after throwing away the crabs, it was hard for him to see what it was that was moving and groaning in the rear of the courtyard. He had to go very close to see that it was an old man, a very old man, lying face down in the mud, who, in spite of his tremendous efforts, couldn't get up, impeded by his enormous wings. Frightened by that nightmare, Pelayo ran to get Elisenda, his wife, who was putting compresses on the sick child, and he took her to the rear of the courtyard. They both looked at the fallen body with mute stupor. He was dressed like a rag picker. There were only a few faded hairs left on his bald skull and very few teeth in his mouth, and his pitiful condition of a drenched great-grandfather had taken away any sense of grandeur he might have had. His huge buzzard wings, dirty and half-plucked, were forever entangled in the mud. They looked at him so long and so closely that Pelayo and Elisendra very soon overcame their surprise and in the end found him familiar. Then they dared speak to him, and he answered in an incomprehensible dialect with a strong sailor's voice. That was how they skipped over the inconvenience of the wings and quite intelligently concluded that he was a lonely castaway from some foreign ship wrecked by the storm. And yet, they called in a neighbor woman who knew everything about life and death to see him. And all she needed was one look to show them their mistake. "He's an angel," she told them. "He must have been coming for the child. But the poor fellow is so old that the rain knocked him down."
The following day, everyone knew that a flesh and blood angel was held captive in Pelayo's house. Against the judgment of the wise neighbor woman, for whom angels in those times were the fugitive survivors of the celestial conspiracy, they did not have the heart to club him to death. Pelayo watched over him all afternoon from the kitchen, armed with his bailiff's club, and before going to bed, he dragged him out of the mud and locked him up with the hens in the wire chicken coop. In the middle of the night, when the rain stopped, Pelayo and Elisenda were still killing crabs. A short time afterward, the child woke up without a fever and with a desire to eat. Then they felt magnanimous and decided to put the angel on a raft with fresh water and provisions for 3 days and leave him to his fate on the high seas. But when they went out into the courtyard with the first light of dawn, they found the whole neighborhood in front of the chicken coop, having fun with the angel, without the slightest reverence, tossing him things to eat through the openings in the wire, as if he weren't a supernatural creature, but a circus animal.
Okay, let's pause there. Thank you. What strikes us as we read this description so far about his appearance and the human response to him?
We took that he was just a circus freak.
Okay. The whole neighborhood has showed up and are just staring at him and
tossing him
little bits to eat.
Well, there's no thought of being hospitable.
That's right.
Or even any idea of giving him assistance to get out of it off. He's in a predicament.
Yeah, he can't even get his face out of the mud.
But yeah.
Paleo and his wife don't do anything about it. Till nighttime comes, and then what does Paleo do?
He locks him up.
In a chicken coop. Okay.
Comment about the inconvenience of the wings.
Yeah, the wings are an inconvenience to rational people.
That's what I picked up on that phrase, inconvenience of the wings. I mean, apparently his impression was this, you know, slovenly character, and his wings became an inconvenience instead of, you know,
being celestial.
Celestial, exactly. Being. We just kind of peg somebody, okay. You know.
Okay. Yes.
Well, and the whole idea that somehow if they're trying to pay, you know, find an easy way to characterize him, and the fact that the one characterization that's sort of given is an angel, but he doesn't really fit their idea of what an angel should be.
That's right. We all know what angels are going to look like, right?
Yeah.
What they do look like. Not this. And what do we do when the celestial being that we expect, you know, does not appear the way we have created the image in our mind?
We don't believe in
him. Yep. They didn't have the heart to club him to death.
They felt very magnanimous.
Yeah.
Like that.
And they had the magnanimous feeling that they'll just put him on a raft with 3 days of provision and send him out to sea. So you can see how Marquez is using this language very carefully to poke fun at the attitudes of anyone who would even think of using a term like that to treat someone with this kind of inhospitality. And the whole neighborhood has showed up. We don't even know how the word got out.
And according to the knowledgeable neighbor lady, he was there to get the child.
Right. What did the neighbor lady,
who knew everything,
who knows everything about life and death,
yeah.
Figures that he came to get the child. This is a newborn and it's ill. And if an angel shows up in a household like this, why, it must be to come and take the child away to heaven. And I mean, that's, what other explanation could there be for this wise woman next door? So already Marquez is alerting us to all sorts of rational explanations for the appearance of this creature. And we can see that the human responses are all inappropriate. And as we'll find out further, virtually all of them seem to be wrong. Who would like to read the next paragraph? Okay, good.
Father Gonzaga arrived before 7 o'clock, alarmed at the strange news. By that time, onlookers less frivolous than those at dawn had already arrived, and they were making all kinds of conjectures concerning the captive's future. The simplest among them thought that he should be named mayor of the world. Others of sterner mind felt that he should be promoted to the rank of five-star general in order to win all wars. Some visionaries hoped that he could be put to stud in order to implant on Earth a race of winged wise men who could take charge of the universe. But Father Gonzaga, before becoming a priest, had been a robust woodcutter. Standing by the wire, he reviewed his catechism in an instant and asked them to open the door so that he could take a close look at that pitiful man who looked more like a huge decrepit hen among the fascinated chickens. He was lying in a corner drying his open wings in the sunlight among the fruit peels and breakfast leftovers that the early risers had thrown him. Alien to the impertinences of the world, he only lifted his antiquarian eyes and murmured something in his dialect when Father Gonzaga went into the chicken coop and said good morning to him in Latin. The parish priest had his first suspicion of an impostor when he saw that he did not understand the language of God or know how to greet his ministers. Then he noticed that seen close up, he was much too human. He had an unbearable smell of the outdoors. The backside of his wings were strewn with parasites, and his main feathers had been mistreated by terrestrial winds, and nothing about him measured up to the proud dignity of angels. Then he came out of the chicken coop and in a brief sermon warned the curious against the risks of being ingenuous. He reminded them that the devil had the bad habit of making use of carnival tricks in order to confuse the unwary. He argued that if wings were not the essential element in determining the difference between a hawk and an airplane, they were even less so in the recognition of angels. Nevertheless, he promised to write a letter to his bishop so that the latter would write to his primate, so that the latter would write to the supreme pontiff in order to get the final verdict from the highest courts.
Okay. Where are the targets of Gabriel Marquez's satire here? The church, okay. In order to find out the final verdict about this angel, Father Gonzaga, who is the key person in this paragraph, has to write letters that will go through the whole hierarchy of the church to the Pope in order that it can be determined what do we do with this angel who has appeared. But of course he believes that he's an imposter because
he doesn't speak Latin.
Doesn't understand God's language, Latin. And doesn't know how to address God's ministers, the priests. So here we see the sense of pride in the narrowness of aspects of the church. What other kinds of things did you pick out from that paragraph? What about all these conjectures that the people have about this person?
They want him to be a stud so that they can be powerful.
Yeah, they wanted to have him create a whole race of winged wise people. And all these practical, political reasons. Make him the mayor of the world. Make him a five-star general so he can win all wars. Or put him out to stud so that he can sire a whole race of winged creatures. You know, what are you sensing here that in the minds of people? Desire for power, you know, for control. You know, here's this strange creature who's allowed immediately. They're thinking of ways they can control the world through this person, either immediately or eventually by creating a whole race of such creatures.
Well, they did the same thing with Jesus when he rode into Jerusalem. And they wanted a king, and here he was, just a plain
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They made him an object instead of a subject.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Objectified
that's right.
Him instead of being like a unique
winged
creature.
Yeah. I mean, nobody's paying any attention to the to his decrepit state. I mean, he's like a street person. He wears the clothes of a rag picker, we heard. And here he's got these bad wings that with parasites on them, and nobody thinks to help him. It's all, how can we use this person for political power? And then the skepticism of the church. Father Gonzaga comes out and preaches a little sermon to all the onlookers there, warning them against the fact that the devil has strange ways. And this angel didn't recognize God's language, Latin, and he didn't kiss my ring or bow to me or whatever he expected an angel to do to address one of the ministers of God. So again, we see the way the church and its sense of appropriate action through all the right channels and behaviors is foremost in Gonzaga's mind, and the people are wanting power over the world as they think about what to do.
I don't know if Marquez would mean this, but what I thought about right away with the angel coming to the city and not being well received is the Old Testament, Sodom and Gomorrah, where angels really come to the city and treated
in different badly. In different form.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And right. And people don't want to recognize that they might be people very deserving of
that's
hospitality.
Right. But we as humans have a very difficult time responding to somebody we don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody who shows up and is not what we expect. And it's the wings that are the real problem here. These people had all seen the poor before, but not with wings. And so what do you do with this kind of creature? Someone to read the next paragraph?
Second.
And maybe the next two, they're short.
His prudence fell on sterile hearts. The news of the captive angel spread with such rapidity that after a few hours the courtyard had the bustle of a marketplace, and they had to call in troops with fixed bayonets to disperse the mob that was about to knock the house down. Elisenda, her spine all twisted from sweeping up so much marketplace trash, then got the idea of fencing in the yard and charging 5 cents admission to see the angel. The curious came from far away. A traveling carnival arrived with a flying acrobat who buzzed over the crowd several times, but no one paid any attention to him because his wings were not those of an angel, but rather those of a sidereal bat. The most unfortunate invalids on earth came in search of health. A poor woman who, since childhood, had been counting her heartbeats and had run out of numbers. A Portuguese man who couldn't sleep because the noise of the stars disturbed him. A sleepwalker who got up at night to undo the things he had done while awake. And many others with less serious ailments. In the midst of that shipwreck disorder that made the earth tremble, Pelayo and Elisenda were happy with fatigue, for in less than a week they had crammed their rooms with money, and the line of pilgrims waiting their turn to enter still reached beyond the horizon.
Okay. Thank you. What kind of impulse do we identify here?
Greed.
Greed. How can I make money out of this circumstance? Fence him in and charge admission. And after a week, their room is just, their whole house has every room filled with money. And of course, the faithful are coming. Most unfortunate individual invalids on earth come. And here's where we realized that, again, that Garcia Marquez is not being totally realistic as he describes these ailments of these people who, you know, have been counting heartbeats since birth and run out of numbers.
Can't stand the noise of the stars.
Can't stand the noise of the stars. Okay.
There's a sadness to that, too.
Oh, yeah.
Tragedies in their lives that people
listen. That's right. And perhaps if he had named ordinary illnesses, it might not have struck us as unusual, but these exaggerated, fantastic illnesses of these people perhaps make us realize how desperate people are and how extreme things could be, even though they've gone.
They're close enough to reality, though, that they, you know, my father has been struggling this year with heart arrhythmia, and he's taking his pulse a lot and yearning for a regular beat, and it's irregular. And so he's counting his heart. I mean, that one hit me poignantly, I guess, because of my father's situation right now. He's counted so many times he might have run out of numbers too.
Yeah.
He had been.
Yeah.
So it's close enough.
Okay, and I thought this would be a good story to read at Holden Village, where the difference between reality and fantasy.
Well, you know, it's interesting too, you know, when you look around history, whenever human beings encountered something unnatural, whether it's Lourdes or hot springs or something that's out of the ordinary, people with infirmities come here for healing.
That's right.
And whatever, you know, geographic phenomenon or whatever. It's a common.
It's a good point.
It's an interesting thing.
When the need for health and when the desire to rid oneself of something horrible hasn't been satisfied in any other way, we tend to grasp onto anything transcendent, anything miraculous, and this has been a kind of miraculous appearance of a very old man with enormous wings who's been identified as an angel. So here they come. Okay, good. Someone read the next paragraph.
The angel was the only one who took no part in his own act. He spent his time trying to get comfortable in his borrowed nest, befuddled by the hellish heat of the oil lamps and sacramental candles that had been placed along the wire. At first they tried to make him eat some mothballs, which according to the wisdom of the wise neighbor woman, were the food prescribed for angels. But he turned them down just as he turned down the papal lunches and that the penitents brought him. And they never found out whether it was because he was an angel or because he was an old man that in the end he ate nothing but eggplant mush. His only supernatural virtue seemed to be patience. Especially during the first days when the hens pecked at him, searching for the stellar parasites that proliferated in his wings, and the cripples pulled out feathers to touch their defective parts with, and even the most merciful threw stones at him, trying to get him to rise so they could see him standing. The only time they succeeded in arousing him was when they burned his side with an iron for branding steers, for he had been motionless for so many hours that they thought he was dead. He awoke with a start, ranting in his hermetic language and with tears in his eyes, and he flapped his wings a couple of times, which brought on a whirlwind of chicken dung and lunar dust and a gale of panic that did not seem to be of this world. Although many thought that his reaction had been one not of rage but of pain, from then on they were careful not to annoy him, because the majority understood that his passivity was not that of a hero taking his ease, but that of a cataclysm in repose.
Thank you. What do we learn about human nature in this paragraph?
They were cruel. They were willing
cruel.
To
they needed to see him move, so they were willing to throw stones at him.
Yeah. And it was even the most merciful who threw stones at him. They want to see him move or stand up. He can hardly get up. You know, he's his wings are so big and heavy. And then they take a cattle branding iron and poke him with a hot iron because they think he's perhaps dead. And of course, he's just sleeping. So once again, the curiosity and the cruelty of human beings come in. Again, when it's a creature we don't understand, instead of washing his wings or feeding him something appropriate, he only eats eggplant mush, it seems. And perhaps they finally figured out and brought that to him. But once again, we have a totally inhospitable reaction. The wise woman from next door, who knows everything about life and death, knows that mothballs are the prescribed diet for angels. Another one of Gabriel Marquez's absurdities.
I was going to say, it didn't help the creature that the church kind of gave permission to be cruel, saying that it could be, you know, what did it say, the devil in disguise
or an imposter.
Yeah, or an imposter. So go ahead and, you know, so it really gave permission.
Yeah.
Instead of saying the exact opposite.
Yeah.
Do we show compassion and hospitality here? Permission to be cruel.
Yeah.
Well, that was interesting, though, too. He said, he's too human to be an angel. And so we're going to treat him cruelly, you know, and they light candles instead of feeding him.
Yeah.
That whole, he's too human, I thought it really struck me, because so we don't have to treat him well.
Don't have to show any reverence.
You think of if he is human, you treat him humanely.
He could be human, but he's not like us.
Yeah, yeah, there's something different, so. So we can do whatever we want. And besides, he's old and decrepit, flea-bitten, can't seem to get off the ground and out of the mud, so we just toss him scraps for breakfast.
I get a kick out of the neighbor that knows everything.
Yeah.
And I feel like we probably all have a few neighbors like that.
Yeah, that's right. And our neighbors have neighbors like that.
I was going to say, we know we're not neighbors.
Listen so much to those neighbors and know everything, but we know they don't.
Yeah.
I think it's funny. It's interesting too that they're still pretty convinced that he's an angel. Yet all the sort of usual associations that you would have of an angel being good and coming for some good purpose as opposed to some malicious thing.
Yeah.
I'm just not there at all.
Yeah.
They do acknowledge, though, that the child gets better.
The child gets better,
exactly.
The rains.
Yeah,
stops.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And like that was attributed to the angels. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. And certainly, Pelea and Elisenda have gotten wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And we learn a little bit more about that as we read on. We'll read the next paragraph. We're about halfway through the story right now. Okay.
Father Gonzaga held back the crowd's frivolity with formulas of maidservant inspiration while awaiting the arrival of a final judgment on the nature of the captive. But the mail from Rome showed no sense of urgency. They spent their time finding out if the prisoner had a navel, if his dialect had any connection with Aramaic, how many times he could fit on the head of a pin, or whether he wasn't just a Norwegian with wings. Those meager letters might have come and gone until the end of time if a providential event had not put an end to the priest's tribulations.
Okay. Good that our theologian has read that paragraph.
I rather enjoy it.
Yeah, well, you should. Yep. Again, theological speculations. You know, how can we prove whether this is an angel or not? How many like this could dance on the head of a pin?
Waiting for the mail from Rome.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a little Minnesota connection too.
Yes.
Now they're thinking he's a Norwegian. They should try lutefisk.
Yeah. Maybe you'd like that better than eggplant mash. Yeah. Okay, next paragraph, would someone read?
You can try. Okay. It so happened that during those days, among so many other carnival attractions, there arrived in town the traveling show of a woman who had been changed into a spider for having disobeyed her parents. The admission to see her was not only less than the admission to see the angel, but people were permitted to ask her all manner of questions about her absurd state and to examine her up and down so that no one would ever doubt the truth of her horror. She was a frightful tarantula, the size of a ram and with the head of a sad maiden. What was most heart-rending, however, was not her outlandish shape, but the sincere affliction with which she recounted the details of her misfortune. While still practically a child, she had sneaked out of her parents' house to go to a dance. And while she was coming back through the woods, after having danced all night without permission, a fearful thunderclap rent the sky in two, and through the crack came a lightning bolt of brimstone that changed her into a spider. Her only nourishment came from the meatballs that charitable souls chose to toss into her mouth. The spectacle like that, full of so much human truth and with such a fearful lesson, was bound to defeat without even trying, that of a haughty angel who scarcely deigned to look at mortals. Besides the few miracles attributed to the angel showed a certain mental disorder, like the blind man who didn't recover his sight but grew three new teeth. Didn't get to walk, but almost won the lottery. And the leper whose sores sprouted sunflowers. Those consolation miracles, which were more like mocking fun, had already ruined the angel's reputation when the woman who had been changed into a spider finally crushed him completely. That was how Father Gonzaga was cured forever of his insomnia, and Paleo's courtyard went back to being as empty as during the time it had rained for 3 days and the crabs walked through the bedrooms.
Thank you. Well, there's a more fascinating and less expensive attraction. A woman who'd been turned into a spider. And what kind of miracles is the angel able to accomplish? They're only consolation miracles, aren't they? The lame man doesn't get to walk, but he almost wins the lottery. Small miracle.
The leper grows sunflowers from
his
sore.
Yeah. So here the people are seeing more and more evidence that this angel is not what they expected the angel to do. And the woman who'd been turned into a spider was a spectacle full of so much human truth. that's the one that's more believable to the audience. Okay, three more paragraphs. Would someone read the next one?
No. The owners of the house had no reason to lament.
And the money they saved, with the money they saved, they built a two-story mansion with balconies and gardens and high netting so that crabs wouldn't get in during the winter, and with iron bars on the windows so that angels couldn't get in. Flyo also set up a rabbit warren close to town and gave up his job as bailiff for good. And Elisenda bought some satin pumps with high heels and many dresses of iridescent silk, the kind worn on Sunday by the most desirable women in those times. The chicken coop was the only thing that didn't receive any attention. But they washed it down with creolin and burned tears of myrrh inside it every so often. It was not an homage to the angel, but to drive away the dung heap stench that still hung everywhere like a ghost, and was turning the new house into an old one. At first, when the child learned to walk, they were careful that he not get too close to the chicken coop. But then they began to lose their fears and got used to the smell. And before the child got his second teeth, he'd gone inside the chicken coop to play, where the wires were falling apart. The angel was no less standoffish with him than with other mortals, but he tolerated the most ingenious infamies with the patience of a dog who had no illusions. They both came down with chicken pox at the same time. The doctor who took care of the child couldn't resist the temptation to listen to the angel's heart, and he found so much whistling in the heart and so many sounds in his kidneys that it seemed impossible for him to be alive. What surprised him most, however, was the logic of his wings. They seemed so natural on that completely human organism that he couldn't understand why other men didn't have them too.
Okay, thank you. What do you think, Bob? Good diagnosis there?
The chicken pox?
No. Yeah, the whistling in the heart, the sounds in the kidneys, the wings. The wings are so natural to physicians' examination that it seems like we all should have. Okay. Now notice how old the child is.
Second
teeth. The child's got a second teeth and has learned to walk. So we're 5 or 6 years down the road, and the angel is still there, and the community still hasn't figured it out. He's still living in the dirty old smelly chicken coop. And the folks who have become rich and put bars on their windows to keep angels out. The angel has brought in this wealth, but they don't want any more angels coming in, or this angel obviously coming into their house to smell it up and mess it up. Okay, the penultimate paragraph.
When the child began school, it had been some time since the sun and rain had caused the collapse of the chicken coop. The angel went dragging himself about here and there like a stray dying man. They would drive him out of the bedroom with a broom, and a moment later find him in the kitchen. He seemed to be in so many places at the same time that they grew to think he'd been duplicated, that he was reproducing himself all through the house. And the exasperated and unhinged Elisenda shouted that it was an awful living, and that it was awful living in that hell full of angels. He could scarcely eat, and his antiquarian eyes had also become so foggy that he went about bumping into posts. All he had left were the bare cannulae of his last feathers. Paleo threw a blanket over him and extended him the charity of letting him sleep in the shed. And only then did they notice that he had a temperature at night and was delirious with the tongue twisters of an old Norwegian. That was one of the few times they became alarmed, for they thought he was going to die, and not even the wise neighbor woman had been able to tell them what to do with dead angels.
Thanks. Okay, he's been there for years. They let him move from the chicken coop to the shed.
And he's all through the house, too.
Yeah, he seems to be everywhere.
Yeah.
Another supernatural element to him. They're finally discovering that he seems to be ill at night. He's got a temperature.
And almost no feathers.
Yep. Nothing left but those white thick things that hold the feathers to the wings.
Did they find out he's Norwegian?
Well, they think that...
They seem to be worried
to
about
think
that.
They can't understand the language, so they assume it must be Norwegian. So. Most of us think it's Swedish, but you know, they think it's Norwegian. And they're worried that he might die, not for the angels' sake, but because they don't know what to do with dead angels. You know, there's no funeral service for dead angels, apparently, so they're worried about the proprieties here. Okay, the final paragraph. Anyone else who hasn't read would like to read?
And yet he not only survived his worst winter, but seemed improved with the first sunny days. He remained motionless for several days in the farthest corner of the courtyard, where no one would see him. And at the beginning of December, some large, stiff feathers began to grow on his wings. The feathers of a scarecrow, which looked more like another misfortune of decrepitude. But he must have known the reason for those changes, for he was quite careful that no one should notice them, that no one would hear the sea chanties that he sometimes sang under the stars. One morning, Alessandro was cutting some bunches of onions for lunch when a wind that seemed to come from the high seas blew into the kitchen. Then she went to the window and caught the angel in his first attempts at flight. They were so clumsy that his fingernails opened a furrow in the vegetable patch, and he was on the point of knocking the shed down with an ungainly flapping that slipped on the light and couldn't get a grip on the air. But he did manage to gain altitude. Alessandra let out a sigh of relief for herself and for him when she saw him pass over the last houses holding himself up in some way with the risky flapping of a senile vulture. She kept watching him even when she was through cutting the onions, and she kept on watching until it was no longer possible for her to see him because he was no longer an annoyance in her life, but an imaginary dot on the horizon of the sea.
Thank you. That's the end of the story. No longer an annoyance in her life, but an imaginary dot as he is flying away. So he apparently is an angel. You know, he can fly. He's old and decrepit and barely, you know, gets off the ground, but he makes it and gains a little altitude and flies off, and Alessandra is finally relieved of this annoyance, this inconvenience, this thing that she's not been able to explain.
After years and years and
years. And years. Yep. She's become wealthy. She's bought those 3-inch heels, those fancy satin dresses, and a mansion. But he has left in pretty much the same state in which he came. It's a story that's a fantasy. I believe that Garcia Marquez gave it the subtitle "A Story for Children." I don't believe for a minute that it's a story for children. I think it's a story for those of us who are in the church, who are involved in the political scene, who are part of our culture. And who don't know how to respond to people who aren't quite the way we are and what we're expecting. Does the story make sense to you, or is it an irritating story? It's got a lot of puzzling things that are hard to explain.
Sad.
Sad story.
It's sad.
Yeah.
Sad.
Very sad.
Profoundly sad.
Yeah.
Why is it sad?
For me, the lack of gratitude, which speaks to all, I mean, we are all these people, and the lack of gratitude for the gifts that made life, they seem to want anyway,
yeah.
The lack of gratitude and the lack of sacredness in this life.
Okay.
The lack of compassion.
The lack of hospitality.
Man.
Okay.
Hospitality.
And this is clearly in a Roman Catholic South American country, so it's a largely Christian country as ours, and here the transcendent has come to earth in largely human form. You'd think that Christians of all people would understand the concept, but this group of people clearly does not.
He's kind of a Jesus figure. I mean, Christ figure.
Yeah.
Were we much different in our attitude and
yeah.
actions toward Christ?
Yeah, that's right.
And at the end, she has the first little bit of compassion for him. Or she was, what was it? She breathed a sigh of relief for herself and for him.
Yeah.
But it was when he became sort of an imaginary God. And when he was sort of distanced and not a real,
yeah,
kind of annoying, messy person.
Yeah.
I think all of us have that. It's easier to believe in something or to feel compassion for people or idealism or whatever when it's a little bit removed. It doesn't kind of confuse and mess up our lives.
Because when this creature was right there in her courtyard for years and years, there had been no appropriate response on the part of the family. We don't know what's happened to the neighbors. Apparently got bored finally and, you know, are not lined up
every
morning.
It was cheaper to see the spider.
It was cheaper to see the spider. That's right.
Novelty wore off.
Yeah. The miracles he accomplished were not all that great.
Almost won the lottery.
Almost won the lottery.
Does the fantastical part of it make us take it less seriously?
Yeah, good question. If this story were told with total realism, except there would have to be an angel, you know, who came. But then if everything else were told in a realistic way without the consolation miracles and without the woman who turned into a spider, all that, would it be as effective?
I don't think so. We missed the point.
We're too close to reality.
Yeah.
We recognize ourselves. We would want to see.
Yeah.
If we had that capacity, the neighbors wouldn't have responded the way they responded.
Yeah. Yeah, very good.
We don't see. We see through a glass dimly, so it has to be exaggerated.
Yeah. Earlier this week, we were reading stories by Flannery O'Connor where people just had to be jolted, and one of them even shot, in order to sort of come to and recognize what one must do to the suffering of the earth, and that is to reach out and love them and touch them and connect with them. This family, this community, doesn't make any real connection ever, or an attempt to connect in a compassionate way with this creature. Whether they believe he's an angel or not, they've been told he's an angel. Father Gonzaga has told them to be careful about believing such things, but clearly most of them do. Many of them come to be healed.
So why did he finally leave?
Why does he leave?
It sounded like his wings finally molted. He could fly with them again.
Yeah, they finally got healthy enough to work, didn't they?
Like an albatross. But...
Yeah. Yep.
I think it's because the boy was starting school. And the angel's work was done.
Okay.
So you think he was there partly because of the boy?
Well, that's what, I mean, the image is that they were frightened he was sick and that's all. I mean, that's my fantasy.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know, there's some blessings that came to them from this weird angel, this turkey in the chicken coop.
Yeah.
And,
you
know, they got wealthy, their son was well, you know, their lives changed considerably, and then the boy was moving towards education, a little bit of independence or whatever. I mean, obviously it was well enough that the original fears were long since gone, which lots of us feel once our kids start school. And maybe the angel was actually a figment of the boy's imagination.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, interesting.
maybe it shows how a child's take on the adult world.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting.
Growing up in a Catholic family, the primary image of angels that you get as a kid is of guardian angels.
Yeah.
Who stand over you and watch and make sure that nothing bad happens to you when you're a kid.
Yeah.
So the angel finally reached a conclusion that it was hopeless to try to change them, and so mercifully left them.
Okay. He clearly made no progress with the adults, right? And we don't learn much. We don't really see anything through the child's eyes, but we do learn in almost offhand comments that he learns to walk, that he gets his second teeth, that he goes to school. Maybe the angel did come to...
And that he interacts with the angel a little bit.
Yeah.
By crawling through, goes in, crawls through the hole in the fence.
And they have enough contact to get chicken pox together.
Yeah.
And only Alessandro sees him go.
Yeah.
The boy doesn't see him go.
Nobody saw him come, and she's the only one who sees him go.
There's kind of a resurrection feeling about it.
Yeah.
You know, that he became more ill and then suddenly got better and rose and left.
Yeah. There's a good feeling that he finally gets out of this bad circumstance and goes back to get a good shower someplace.
I had never read this before, but I read it this afternoon, and my first reaction was, this whole thing is absurd, I don't get it. But that's a gut reaction for me, I go with that. And what's absurd? And everything in this story is absurd.
Yeah.
And maybe everything that we culturally and socially organize is absurd, or could be done, organized, and done another way. The way we create our families, the way we create our religions, the way we, whatever. Could we do it a different way, other than the way that we expect it to be done? And so I thought, anyway.
Right.
I didn't get it.
Although some of the things that we do as a culture are at least as absurd as some of these things, aren't they?
Right.
Yeah. That's right. Any last words about this? It is a story that you can't take on a literal level, but there's a lot of fantasy involved, there's a lot of absurdity in it, and yet behind it all, can you hear the voice of this writer and sense his probable intent to get us to wake up, pay attention to how we are treating the unknown, treating the stranger, treating the transcendent that drops down in our backyard, becomes flesh and lives amongst us, and what do? You know. Yes, Bob?
This is a little bit maybe irrelevant, but I couldn't, and I don't want to throw stones at the Catholic Church, but this winter when that little girl in Nicaragua, I think she was 11 years old, got pregnant, and that really got to be a service. I mean, that was an unusual event. It got to be a religious service without, as far as I could see, a lot of consideration for the child. She should have an abortion or not. But the church got involved in this hierarchical stuff. The medical community in Nicaragua and the church got out of something. I read some about this in the New York Times. It just seemed like they forgot about the girl. It kind of, because it was a strange event like this, and I don't even know how what happened.
Yeah.
It kind of dropped off.
Well, so, good analogy.
I think that there's the more I think about the story, the more ideas come to me. One is that when things happen to us that don't fit our pigeonholes, our categories, we immediately distance. We don't feel at home. We don't immediately welcome that strange, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I mean, the simplest illustration is imagining yourself dropped down into a country where you don't speak the language. And it doesn't take very long for you to feel very bizarre, you know, or to have someone drop to you. The other idea is that that there's an egocentric kind of thing here, that if the Holy was to come amongst us, We presume that the angel will speak our language. Isn't it God's job to serve me?
Yeah.
You know. And why do we presume that? Why do we think those things?
Good thought. Well, it's been an hour. Thank you very much. You've raised lots of good issues, and I think you've understood the story very well. And thank you for being here and taking
Thank
part.
You. Thank you. Thank you.